What's up, guys? Welcome back to Kind of Funny's Edgar Wright in Review. That's right. We are ranking and reviewing every Edgar Wright movie that we can watch available on streaming platforms. As always, I'm Tim Geddes, joined by one of the coolest dudes in video games, Greg Miller.
Bonjour.
The producer slash seducer, Nick Scarpino.
Do I need a haircut?
Ha, I get it. I'm gonna remember the movie we watched.
The big dog, Kevin Coelho.
Oh, I get it. Because the, yeah. Yeah, I thought he was talking about my hair.
And the Nitro Rifle, Andy Cortez. We're all of us are such assholes that everyone immediately thinks that the other people are talking shit about them.
God, I have to just blame myself for that, just to like a 90% degree.
Oh, it's 10, your fault. 10, yeah.
The other 10% Greg Miller. But I'm 90% right there.
Bread makes you fat.
Son of a bitch.
That's the what line I was gonna line. Go with.
What a good line. Of course, Nitro Rifle Andy Cortez is here in the building. This is Kind of Funny's In Review. Every week, we rank and review two different film franchises. Right now, we are doing the Edgar Wright movies, and we are also doing John Wick. Closing it out next week. I'm a little bit sad about that, got to be honest, with John Wick Chapter 3. But today, we are talking about Scott Pilgrim versus the World. This show you can watch on YouTube.com/kindoffunny or roosterteeth.com. You could also listen to it on a podcast service. Just search for Kind of Funny Reviews. If you want to get the show ad-free or watch live as we record it, you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunny to do that. Today, we're brought to you by Limited Run Games, pre-orders of Scott Pilgrim versus the World, the game, complete edition. You got to love when things work out like that. You know what I mean?
But we're such fucking sellouts.
But today we are talking about Scott Pilgrim versus the World, a runtime of 1 hour and 52 minutes, released on August 13th, 2010. The first draft of the script for the film was completed after only 2 out of the 6 Scott Pilgrim books were drawn. The final book came out July 20th, 2010. So that explains a lot of the differences between the movies in the book, because if you guys haven't read the book, it's drastically different than the movie. Similar, pretty much every major story beat after the main beginning part. Yeah, it's the same tone. This is one of the examples where I couldn't tell you which is better. They're both extremely awesome, just in different ways. What do you say, Greg?
The book by a mile, but I'm sure we'll get into it.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, man. The book makes a lot of really bad choices. The movie makes a lot of really bad choices. Somewhere in between the two, there's like a perfect version of this, but I don't think it's either of them in particular. Directed by Edgar Wright, once again, a budget of $85 million. The film was given a production budget of $85 to $90 million, but a lot of that was offset by taxes, which is a good thing because the box office was only $48.1 million. So it like really, really, really bombed at the box office. Became a cult classic, made a shit ton of money on home release and all that.
And that makes a lot of sense.
Then it ended up not. What do you mean makes a lot of sense?
Well, I was going to say, I finished that movie last night. I was like, I wonder why they never made a sequel to this. This would be a good movie to make a sequel to. Guess that makes sense now, Tim. Well, didn't do so well in the box office.
But also, the story ends. Like, there's no, right?
Oh, sure. But, I mean, in that world, you're like, it's such a cool world they built you could totally see him come back and do, like, Scott Pilgrim's evil exes or whatever, and then Ramona has to fight them or something like that. Like, I'm just thinking, Andy, I'm thinking top level. We're in the room. We're Warner Brothers right now.
Nick's a Hollywood exec right now. He wants to make back these investments. He wants to build a universe. He wants to have Scott and Ramona have a kid. We jump ahead 30 years. They're fighting exes.
You're the idea guy. We're thinking KB Toys. We're thinking EB Games, right?
Let's get a Chris Evans prequel here. Let's see what's going on with his
Old
career.
Navy, right? Jabot. I'm thinking of all these grand deals we could be making right now, everybody.
Yeah, I like it. I like it a lot. Okay. Greg Miller, let's start with you. Hi. What do you think about Scott Pilgrim versus the World?
This is my second time seeing Scott Pilgrim versus the World. The first time was at that infamous San Diego Comic-Con screening, where it was like all of Comic-Con, and I got to sit right behind the cast, which is cool because Brandon Routh was there and he was Superman. I feel the same way I did back then, even though I don't. It's a weird one because I don't think about it ever. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I know Kevin really loves the movie and it comes up a lot in conversation. And I'm always like, I remember seeing it that one time, but I remember not loving it. This is like such a beautiful, stylish, cool, like visual, like the movie's just top notch in every way, and I just don't care for the subject material at all. I just don't like Scott Pilgrim, and I don't like Ramona, and I don't think they're good characters. And so watching it, I think, is a visual delight. Jen and I were watching last night all the how does this look so good? Like, oh my God, this came out in 2010 and it looks this good. This is incredible. Look at that, blah, blah. Like, it's Edgar Wright doing everything we've seen him do and then doing so much more and doing it better than he's probably ever done it in terms of shots and effects and everything else. And it's just a movie that I finish and I'm like, all right, cool. Yeah, I didn't love that. I want to love that and I don't love it, even though I think it checks so many boxes for being funny and being a million different things.
Andy Cortez.
Upon watching it, I just kept thinking to myself, I wish it were anybody but Michael Cera. and I think Michael Cera is supposed to exude this lady killer, and I just don't think he's that. Like, look at him. He's not a lady killer. And immediately I go to, what if this was Zac Efron playing a dick that's a lady killer, that's a believable lady killer, because I think Zac Efron's obviously a much more attractive dude than Michael Cera. So, like, I appreciate the dick parts of Scott Pilgrim and how he needs to better himself and eventually have that sort of character turn where he understands why he's been wrong and why he's been an asshole his whole life. But the whole, like, you know, you've been wooing a bunch of girlfriends, I just don't believe. It's not believable to me with Michael Cera. That being said, agreed with Greg. Obviously, it's watching this movie is sort of one of those things that it's kind of a, it felt like a dream come true to see all these video game things being put into a movie and done really well. And I think it's all about the tone and the humor and the jokes and all that stuff works. Sorry, in any other movie, when The Rock is going in the first person view in Doom, it doesn't work because the movie's just shitty, right? But with Scott Pilgrim, it just has that writing style. It has all of the wit and humor and the quick line delivery, and it's very musical, just like, you know, Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz were. I appreciate it for all those aspects, and I still very much enjoy the movie. I just think I liked it a little bit less this time around, and I think that's just because I hadn't seen it in a while.
Kev.
Yeah, I mean, I love this movie. Like, I was watching it yesterday, and it's like I got into the comics when they came out, and I remember the last one came out right around when the movie was going to come out. So it was like a mystery of, like, how will everything end? And it's, I understand that, like, these are a lot of broken characters that they kind of gloss over, like, their faults, and yeah, they don't grow too much, but they do grow, I think, enough. But I love this movie, and I think still now it's my favorite comic book adaptation. They got so many of the things right, you know, that, like, it's,
yeah,
so much is incorporated in, like, video game culture and all this other things that are kind of, like, massaged into the comic that they were able to portray in such a cool way. Like, how cool is it when he, like, punches people and it, like, pops up, like, in the power, like, coin. They turn into coins. Yeah. Yeah, it's
Kevin. I was about to mention real quick that I didn't read to the comics, but I know that there had to have been a lot of moments of specific lines that were read out in the movie that were probably from the comic that when you watch it, you go, oh, that's cool. And you have a little bit extra appreciation for that. I didn't, obviously, because I didn't read it, but I got to assume there were those moments, Greg or Kevin?
I mean, there were, but it's been a long time since I've seen. There's a lot of moments that are like shot for shot, like comic book stuff.
I just think the movie feels so quotable, Tim, that I got to assume so many of these lines are from the comic book. Like, they feel so. Some lines seem so random and out of nowhere. It seems like that's straight from the source material.
Well, some of them are, but that's what I was kind of alluding to earlier, where the book and the movie are very different, where they use the medium they're in to kind of tell the story, the same story, which results in different uses and different, like, dialogue and, you know, different characters kind of being in place for others or saying things that others would, because it works better in that medium. And so a lot of it, whereas normally we watch comic book movies, we're like, oh man, this is exactly that scene. Mm-hmm. With this, it's less that, and it's more like, oh wow, this is an extremely well thought out version of what that scene would look like in a comic or what that scene would look like in a movie. I think a good example of that is the fourth evil ex, Roxy. Like, when she first comes and they're like in that, like, not alleyway, but like the snow covered street, like, that is entirely a recreation of the Ninja Gaiden opening from the NES game.
Oh, that's cool. That's really cool.
It's like, that it looks very similar to the comic version, but it's actually not a reference to the comic. It's a reference to Ninja Gaiden.
Got it.
Right. So it's things like that.
All the Zelda sound effects I just loved. It just makes me
Crazy. Am I crazy? Wasn't the Zelda song in the beginning of it, or at some point they're playing like that?
The fairy
like
mount.
Yeah, when he's walking around.
Yeah, there's a bunch of different Zelda sound effects. The Link to the Past boss theme, like intro plays for a bit. But one cool thing about the Zelda stuff is that Edgar Wright had to go to Nintendo, obviously, to ask for the shit, because Nintendo usually doesn't play nice with this shit. And he straight up said, like, look, guys, it's like a nursery rhyme to a generation. And he showed the scene they were going to use it in. And Nintendo was like, all right, cool.
That's awesome. That's awesome. That's
really cool.
Well, I wouldn't expect it from Nintendo.
I poured some water. I fucked up. I'll be right back.
Yeah, I totally agree, Greg. I was kind of surprised by that. And I was wondering, you know, what lengths they had to go to in order to get the rights for it.
Yeah. Whatever,
because I just know how Nintendo can be. And sure enough, I was just credits are scrolling by. I'm watching, you know, all Mario and Zelda sound effects provided by Nintendo. It's really cool.
There's a part of me that just thinks we're going to start seeing sparks and then like smoke coming out from underneath the desk with Tim.
He is running around like a crazy person.
There's something
right on him. Is his tower talking, that close? Is that right?
I think it is. He's out? Very scary. I've never seen Tim move this fast in my life.
He doesn't move this fast ever. Yeah,
he said I dropped my water. I thought he said I forgot my water.
There's a lot of like
he's good. He's back up.
Like all the electrical stuff's right there.
Good recovery, Tim. Good recovery.
Proud of you, Tim. You're not dead. We were worried about it, though.
No, he's muted. Yeah.
Go for it, Nick.
This is the second time I've seen this movie. I left the theaters and I had very much a similar feeling to Greg, where I thought the movie was fun to watch, visually stimulating, had some good laughs, but it was mostly form over function. It was very, very stylish. And I kind of left remembering, and I think I even said it on a podcast last week where I was like, I just don't think the Scott Pilgrim character is likable at all. And it makes the movie hard. Second time around, I actually liked him a lot more. And I do think there was more of an arc than I gave it credit for the first time. Right. And I think I was specifically a little hung up on the fact that he was mistreating knives. And I think I still think that's kind of horrible, but by the end of it, I realize how kind of flawed Ramona is also, and it's really their story together that he's learning from. I just don't think they 100% nailed that arc, and I don't think they 100%. I think they could have pushed it a little farther. For instance, like all of his friends always tell him he's an asshole, but he never really suffers any consequences other than quote unquote dying. But then that doesn't really feel like it's a real consequence because it's a video game and he has an extra life that we already saw. But other than that, like to kind of rebut what Andy said, like I totally. You nailed it, right? Zac Efron would have been hilarious in this. But there's just something so utterly charming and disarming about Michael Cera. And I think that's why it works as him being a lady killer, because Ramona's annoyed with him the first like few times she meets him. And then he's just like, he just gets in there because he's this like cute little puppy dog thing. And you end up just wanting to take him home. Greg Miller from Kind of Funny.
That's my thing. And I don't agree. I don't watch it or feel when I watch it that Scott's a lady killer. Like I feel like he's, you know, I guess, you know, I don't even know. I guess I was gonna say the stereotypical geek, but maybe the stereotypical geek, you know, we'd think of or whatever if you're thinking of indie rock and video games merged into one, right? Like in like the shiftless layabout, like just doesn't know what to do with his life kind of stereotype. But it's that thing where it'd be different, I think, if we were going through his exes and they were all Brie Larson's, right? Like even Brie Larson in this movie, while of course a gorgeous person and now a rock star in this, mm-hmm. when I think of what him and Natalie's relationship would have been, I don't think Natalie looked like Envy does. I think, you know what I mean? Like that makes sense. Like,
it absolutely does. I think maybe so maybe lady killer is the wrong word for it. Maybe he just mistreats the people that he's dated before because he's
sure that I believe for sure. Cause he doesn't have his shit together. But, my thing. Okay. Go on.
I was going to say, there are a couple of conversations that do allude to, oh, what about her? And didn't you date her? And what about her? And like, I just felt like
that's all comic references. That's all stuff that is just like alluding to the comic editors where they go a lot further.
You
meet so many exes of his, and like Natalie comes back a lot more. Like, there's just a lot of different changes. That was like a fun nod.
But like, the crux is that they're not good to the people, like their partners in relationships, right?
Yeah,
like,
that's the whole point.
Yeah, he's a dick. I don't know. I guess. Yeah, I love all the awkward moments with Michael Cera, and obviously he's great at line delivery when it's, you know, when the writing is that good, he's so good at doing that. But yeah, okay, I guess I could see where y'all are coming from, where he's not supposed to be this absolute, this dude just, you know, getting ladies left and right. That makes sense.
I take it less as he's a lady killer and more like what I really like about this movie is it isn't just dependent on video game references or music references or Toronto references. It's kind of all of those things together creating the world of Scott Pilgrim. And I think that stuff is like he's kind of a big deal in those worlds, right? He has a band, it plays video games, he like is kind of known in the Toronto, knows all the cool Toronto spots. It's like, I think girls like him because of that, because he's in all the cool spots of this world, right? And well, I've seen this movie like 10 times. I absolutely love it, but it has so many flaws and it is problematic as all shit. And I just think that I love this movie not because of Scott Pilgrim or Ramona. They are just two of the many, many, many characters in this movie played totally by such a fantastic cast, like specifically, you know, people that weren't necessarily such a big deal. I mean, like Chris Evans wasn't Captain America then, you know what I mean? Like freaking Anna Kendrick was nothing. Yeah. She was just like a side character in Twilight, right? Yeah. Aubrey Plaza, like the list just goes on and on. Brie Larson, like it's insane the people they got in this movie.
Brandon Routh, put some respect on the name, all right?
Absolutely, man. Like there's just such a constantly there's characters being introduced that are just like, oh, that's
Fran cool. Mirabella. Put some respect on that.
They put him in. Yeah.
Thomas Jane pops up. Punisher, come on.
Oh god, that was so the vegan police scene. I forgot that was in there, and I was like, this is so good.
Yeah, the line of her mentioning he's vegan, like I'd fucking died. I was laughing.
But no, but it's just the bold face, like he's vegan, therefore he's better than you.
Yeah.
and then when he dies and the vegan police in the background are like caught in Michael Cera's slow-mo and they high five. It's like it's those moments to me that make this movie fucking
thoroughly entertaining.
It's what it's about. Like opening with Universal, like the 16-bit style, like video game opening, it was just like, okay, cool, we're setting a tone and I'm obviously fucking here for it. But then it's like, it starts off, we get the little prologue bit of like, oh, he's dating a high schooler.
Immediately Scott Pilgrim is dating a high schooler.
A scumbag, bad guy that we're not rooting for, right? They start playing music and that opening scene is just, it's fucking rad as all shit. And it's like, all right, cool. I guess this, like, I don't really give a shit too much about like this type of rock music, but they're committing so hard to it that I'm like, I'm in. I'm totally in. And I am all about this world. And I want to see every single thing you have to offer. And I read the comics going into it. So getting to the first Evil X, the fact that the first Evil X fight is a musical Bollywood battle, I love that because it's like, that's Edgar Wright being like, fuck it. Like, we're not going to give them time to like build up and just have a basic fight and then keep growing. It's like every single fight is going to be insanely ridiculously intricate and unique, focusing in like paying homage to a lot of video games we love, but also all of them fitting into this battle of the bands idea that they have going on with all the other plots. Like this masterfully done in so many ways, and it's just like, yeah, at the end of the day, Scott sucks, but like I don't think that really matters that much for what this movie actually is. Having said that, the second half of this movie, like, I do wish it was its own movie. Like, this should have been two movies, and I understand that they couldn't have done that. No. But they speed through the X's so quickly that it just means nothing, and then we're left with Scott making decisions that feel super empty at the end. I mean, like, the funniest thing about the end of this movie is there are two different versions, and if you look at the special scenes on the Blu-ray or whatever, it's like, there's an alternate end where he just ends up with knives, and it's equally, like, wow, okay. I guess that's how it ends.
Yeah,
like,
and I think
pretty dumb and rushed.
I think working off that, one of the things that I wish they had done was push the character a little bit more. Because to me, he's in that weird nebulous area where because it is Michael Cera, he's so likable. But you really should hate this character at some point because he's making very, very poor choices. But instead, I don't know, like part of me says he's unsympathetic. The other part of me says he's so unbelievably charming because it's Michael Cera that I'm going to give him a pass. But what I wanted almost this character to start off with was like Bill Murray from Scrooged, where he's just an asshole and he just is totally abusing his power and he's totally abusing the fact that he's in this band to like get these girls and this and that. And then as you subtly start peeling apart those layers, it's because of the past traumas that he's become that. And then through his actions with Ramona and fighting these exes and he sees how they've mistreated her, he gets to a better path. And I know that's in there, and it is in there, because I've watched the second time. I specifically watched. I was like, I want to see where this arc goes. It is 100% in there. It's just they don't push it far enough in either direction for me to love the character or hate the character. I'm just kind of middle of the road with them. And unfortunately, that means by the time we get to like the third or fourth X, I'm like, I don't care about the fighting so much anymore because I'm not 100% invested in this character.
For me, it's, yeah, like, and I know, again, that I'm with Tim, honestly. And that's the thing is I don't hold even, I read the graphic novels when it was the movie was coming out and I wanted to do it. And yeah, at launch, the final one wasn't out, right? The movie beat the final book out. Is that correct? Do I remember that correctly?
No.
Other way around?
You're wrong by a little bit, but
okay.
The caveat is you saw it because you saw the Comic-Con premiere. So you saw it before the book came.
Thank you. There you go. My thing always with the books was, and again, I don't have them on a pedestal. It was similar, I think, in just a way. By the time I picked up these, you know, what, it was six books, right? Seven books? Mm-hmm. So it must have been like, you know, number six or number five, where I went through and just marathoned them all out. But the reason I think the books are far and away better than the movie, and again, the movie's a visual stunner and funny and everything else and great music, I think, personally. It's my cup of tea. But it's the fact that the end of this movie, as we just talked about being rushed, and the crux of us, of Scott becoming, in quotes, a likable character, right, is, I think, our definition of, when we talk about this always, of like, it's show, don't tell. And they tell us, right? Where it's like, Scott dies, and literally Ramon is like, maybe it isn't me you should be fighting for. And he comes out, and it pulls out, Scott's learned the power of self-respect. And it's like, did he? And sure, he goes through and does the immediate apologies to everybody else, blah, blah, blah. And it's just like, this feels completely unearned. Where in the comic book, I remember it being actual growth throughout the books of him getting a job and him moving out and him having to actually become an adult, seeing all that happen. Whereas in they showed me there, right? In the movie, they just tell me he's figured it all out and then really don't show me. I think the strongest ending for the book or the movie should have been he ends up with neither of them. That he is like, you know what? I got to work on myself. I got to figure this out kind of thing instead of I'm going to go start a new life with Ramona or start a new life with Knives. Because I really appreciate at the end, Knives learning the lesson of like, and it could just be a line, but I believe it, right? I've heard just being like, I'm too cool for you anyway. And it's like, yup, you know, Knives has been on this journey as well to get to the end and be like, you know what? You are kind of a weirdo. I'm 17 and you're 22. Like, I am cooler than you and I don't need to worry about this.
Having said all that, I'm glad he wound up with Ramona at the end.
Sure.
I feel like I didn't know, not for any reason of like, for real reasons. Like, I feel like that made sense because I remember someone saying that there was an alternate ending where he wound up with Knives. And I was like, that's, that does not make any sense for this character. Ramona, obviously a contemporary of his, they both have those similar life experiences. And like, I just feel like when he goes away with her, I'm like, you guys are going to have a better life. I don't
work
believe
on
they're
this
going,
together.
Yeah, I don't believe these characters are going to have everlasting love, but I do believe that for the 2 years where they make this relationship work, they will learn from each other, they will grow, and they will move on. Where if he were to wind up with Knives, that to me represented regression in his character. So I'm glad that they, like, I remember watching this in theaters the first time being like, wow, you've just been such a dick to Knives that he just runs off. But it makes more sense to me now that I have a little bit more life experience being like, no, you gotta, Ramona is the person you should be. That's the person you're gonna learn from the most. Also, let the high school person be in high school, for Christ's sake.
Well, do you think that she breaks up with Neil? Or are they still dating
at the end? Yeah, no, I bet she breaks up with Neil. Because I think, her at the end, she has her own realization, even though it's not pounded into your head of she's learned the power of self-respect. I think on the other side of that, she's learned a bit. And she knows that she was just dating Neil to try to get on Scott's radar. But now that she hasn't even been on Scott's radar, that's not fair. You hope not, because, you know, young Neil, a.k.a. Neil. Cool dude.
I didn't even feel like... Like they were together at the end. It just felt like they had kind of like Knives and Neil. I didn't even feel like they were even a pair towards the end.
He punched the highlights out of her hair.
There's so much funny stuff to
love. I love the line when she's like, "What do you play?" He goes,
Zelda, Tetris.
Zelda, Tetris. And he's like playing with the DS. And like that character, that guy nailed that role.
Let's get to the plot.
I wrote a song, everybody, for it. All right, let me know how the guitar sounds and everything, okay? Y'all hear that?
Yeah, I hear.
It's time for the plot. Let's hear how Scott is such a dick. Brie Larson's hot. This movie's even got Chris Evans. Tell us the plot, Uncle Nick. Tell us how Scott is such a dick. Now everyone.
Okay, you nailed the ooh, didn't so much nail the everyone. I'm also going to need you to rewrite it.
Well, I just don't want to be too loud.
For Greg doing the plot, not Nick.
That's okay. That's okay. No, I freaked out for a second there. I freaked out for 5 seconds. I was like, oh, fuck. Was I could have said,
tell us the plot, Gregory. Yeah, I could have like split that up into.
It was amazing. That was fantastic.
Yeah, can I put one in there? Good job, Andy Cortez.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
That was really great. Tell us the plot. Greg, you suck.
Okay, tell us that works.
Greg, you suck. You fucking suck.
What do you fucking suck?
One day Greg's just gonna fuck it, you know what I mean? And I'm gonna just
knock
it.
You the fuck
I'm
out.
I'm gonna deserve it.
That was the best song you've ever done, Andy. Good job up until you turned it around to me. Welcome to Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, everybody. We open with the 16-bit Universal logo everybody loves, and then we're right into the crux of the issue. Scott Pilgrim is dating a high schooler. Of course, we're at band practice in the kitchen talking to all the different people there. Girl from newsrooms there, what up? And you meet all the bands, and then Knives shows up, right? And we, of course, recap again, because they want to wade into this very prickly issue of him being 22 and her being 17. They've done nothing. We're stressed to this several times. They've barely held hands or whatever. Thank you. So we're admitting this is super weird and fucked up. Okay. That what happens.
Don't they make it a point to kind of be like, hey, this is you like mourning. The Audrey Plaza, I think.
Aubrey Plaza.
She's like, hey, like, you are not handling this well. Like, this relationship is directly connected to the fact that, like, you're still...
Yeah, I forget. She doesn't say it's the rebound, right? But it was something like that. She goes, no, this is the rebound. When he's like, I already had my rebound phase, and this is what it is, whatever. And so there's the band, and they start jamming, and Knives is there, and then we get the amazing shot Tim was talking about, right, where they're playing, and we pull out, and we just keep going backwards. Fucking love that, as you go deeper and deeper into the hall, so and get the actual information. We come back, Knives is blown away, she thinks it's amazing, and then we're just kind of into Scott's life, right? We are introduced to the rest of the characters, too. He lives with Kieran Culkin. Shout out to Succession. Watch it on HBO if you're not already. So come on, get your shit together. It sucks that there's a
Kieran Culkin.
Yeah, of course. Just in general, he kills it in this role. Kills it.
And also, Wallace is a character, fucking so awesome. I love him. This is so many funny parts.
Not to be confused with Rory Culkin, who I confused him for in Signs.
That's true. Right. You did do that. Yeah, you did do that.
Right. Kieran Culkin, if you're watching, I apologize. You were in Scott Pilgrim and The Dangerous Lives of Altar Boys.
And also, just to shout out what Blessing said during that Signs watch along, the Culkins are weird.
Come on, let's not fair, we don't know fair. Them they're actors, we don't know their lives, come on.
So we're introduced to Wallace, like you said. He lives with Scott. They have one little bed on the ground they share. Wallace, they go around his apartment like he's got it together with his computer and all the stuff that Scott has, except the lame kissing girls poster that of course every college dorm had when I was growing up. You had that poster?
Of course. Which one is it?
It was in the Ant House at one point. I remember. I forget who hung it. I think it's called The Kiss, right? It's The Kiss, yeah. Right.
And they're wearing Jordans.
Yeah. They're wearing Jordans.
Is that? No, had Charlie's Angels.
I don't remember their legs, yeah.
No. Yeah. There's two versions of it, of The Kiss. They're both two women kissing, but one of them, they're wearing Jordan 11s.
The one I'm thinking of, Greg, they're on their sides.
Yeah, the one that's in this movie. We're introduced to, Scott sucks, mm-hmm. and he has nothing and no possessions and no job, and he lives there pretty much rent-free or whatever with Kieran Culkin. And then Knives comes over, they go to pick her up at school. Then Kieran Culkin fucks off, and Scott and her go on their usual dates they do, where they go to Pizza Pizza, which, of course, is the Canadian Little Caesars. They go and they play DDR, and they're really good at it, and they're simpatico as they do their little moves and roll around. They go to the record store where Aubrey Plaza's character works to begin with. She'll be in a million different things. Somewhere in here, of course, we meet Anna Kendrick. I think it's when, again, Scott Pilgrim was dating a high schooler at the beginning, and then when Wallace gets mad at him, he immediately texts Anna Kendrick, who immediately calls Scott Pilgrim.
So funny. He's like falling asleep.
Yeah, really.
Like, well, how do you do that?
Hilarious stuff.
Was that later?
Yeah, that's not the first one. That's when he comes home drunk later on meeting Ramona, I think, or having the dream about Ramona or whatever. But he has the dream about Ramona where she's out delivering her packages and she's skating through the subneural space network highway of his brain that she'll explain later. Whatever.
Mario 2.
Okay. He wakes up. He's late to go meet, or he's supposed to take Knives to the library. He's late for that. And then he goes there and does it. And then as they're leaving, he sees Ramona delivering a package, thus setting into play the events of this here movie.
I really love the Knives coming and being like, oh, it's 30. Like, you're supposed to get me 30 minutes ago. And he goes, how could I forget?
It's so sad, but his reaction's so good. Like, you know, like, the chemistry that, like, God damn it, what's the kid's name?
Michael Cera. Scott.
Michael Cera has with everyone. I'm not a Michael Cera fan. His face, his hair specifically in this infuriates me, and I know that it's a bit, but I just can't get past it.
Infuriates me.
The way he plays off with everyone, like the way that he interacts with everyone, I mean, it's Oscar worthy acting
from Michael Cera.
Wow. From there, they go to a party that night. The band does. This is where Scott finally meets Ramona. He does not do well. He talks to her and he's a big old idiot, right? I forget what's he saying, because she'll say Pac-Man to him in the next thing. The Pac-Man information. She's like,
what's cool is earlier, while he was on the date with Knives, we see the exact conversation going total opposite way, where he's like amazing.
Where she's into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he also, and the guy at the party is the veterinarian from Better Call Saul. That guy. Oh, he's also Como? The guy in The Office. The IT guy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that dude.
Yeah, he's good.
She blows him off or whatever. He comes home. This is where Wallace comes home drunk, and he's like, I fell in love with this girl. Did you break up with the other girl? No. And that's when he texts Anna Kendrick before, you know, it's even done. He passes out. This then leads to the next scene, right, where Scott's like, what's the URL for Amazon.ca, which is a funny joke. He's like, Amazon.ca. This is where the email pops up from Patel, right, who's like, we're going to fight, 70 oh. LXs, whatever. And he's just like, yeah, boring. And
I love that, because he was like, this is so boring. It just like closes it out.
Closes it out, goes back about his day. Is this where time starts slipping, right? Where he's like going from scene to scene really quickly because he's just obsessed with Ramona.
He puts in the order, right? And then
yes, he ordered the thing.
Sits by the door at some point. Doesn't he just sit at the door?
Yeah.
And then Knives opens the door, right? Because you think it's going to be Ramona to pick it up. He opens the door with Knives. Then they go to the...
Then they go to practice.
Record. Yeah.
Sure.
We can skip
they go to the record shop. They go to practice. They go to the same four locations all the time. I think, this is where they go out. And it's not... Obviously, Scott is no longer into it. They're not in simpatico anymore. He doesn't care about anything she's saying. He goes to band practice again with them. Time slipping because he's just so hung up on Ramona. Eventually, he gets back home, and then we get the dream sequence again where she's using it and explains that it's subspace highway. Then he wakes up as she's skating up to his door in the dream. He runs over, opens the door. It's her. He won't sign the package until she like agrees to go on a date with him or whatever. She's like, fine, whatever. Does it. She skates away. She melts the ice as she goes or whatever, which is cool because Toronto's very cold. We're in Toronto, by the way. We didn't set that up, I don't think, at the very, very beginning.
Another great cut, by the way, because she's like, he's like, well, you're not going to, you'll go out with me when I sign it. She says, yeah. It's that Edgar Wright smash, boom, boom, boom. And then it ends with him throwing the package over his shoulder into the trash can. Like, he didn't give a shit about it, which I thought was great.
Took 38 takes, but he made it in.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah. Bro, half the movie is CG Edgar Wright. Just fucking CG the box in. Come on, move on.
Edgar Wright said in the commentary, he was just like, we totally could have CG'd it, but we wanted to have some believability in the scene so that like when the smash cuts happen and stuff, like it feels better than just organic. Like everything feeling fake, which is really
That's
cool.
That's a and, strong
like,
call.
One other point I want to make, going back to what Andy said last week when we were talking about Hot Fuzz, of Edgar Wright's use of cuts to propel things forward is just so great, where the different scenes of getting on a train, getting on a bus, getting in the thing for Simon Pegg's character to get to the town. Similar thing here with Knives and Scott, when it's like cutting between all the different places that we already saw them go, but their conversation is just one constant conversation.
Yeah.
I love that.
They go out on the date. They do the cheap thing of just walking around. I forget, they hang out. That's what they describe it, right? Because eventually there is Lana with this, so this was a date. They walk around, they hang out, they go on the swings, which is right from the, you know, a panel from the comic. They go back to her place. She makes tea. She goes to change. Scott's really cold. He comes in. She's changing, bro. But then it seems like he's crossed the line, but then he hasn't because she comes over. Then they get into bed under the covers with some funny dialogue there, right?
I was like, I have a great line before. I love that line. I could not have, I could just not have tea. It's such a fucking thing you would say in that situation.
They make out on the bed. She's in her underwear, but eventually she's like, you know what? I've decided I don't want to have sex with you, Pilgrim. Scott respects those boundaries, isn't okay with it. She says she might change her mind. He stays over, and in the morning, they leave. She gives him her number with the seven X's underneath it. That's when she skates away and we see the ice melting and seeing how cool that is. Oh, I think I skipped already right when... No, I didn't. I was going to say when Knives said she was in love, but that's now, right? Because, yeah, now they go... Because he comes home, he's in love. No, I skipped. I'm skipping. No, so he goes back. Then it's they talk and they do the band thing. Then they go to the Battle of Bands. Oh, he invites her, Ramona, too, to the Battle of the Bands. She says she'll come. They go to Battle of the Bands. This is when, and you know, of course, there's a whole thing. If they get it through Battle of the Bands, they get a record contract. They're there. Ramona shows up. He's overwhelmed because she actually came. That's really cool. Then Knives shows up there too. This is where they start talking. He panics. He runs away. He runs backstage. The other guy, what's his name? The lead singer. Steven Stills. He's freaking out because he's jitter. Scott's kind of tries to get him back on it. Kim, of course, is over all this bullshit. Young Neil's just being young.
Next up, kind of funny.
Yeah. I'm sorry. We got to stop. Guys, I know it's Friday. I know it's late. But the wig on this lead singer is just, it's too much, Tim. It's just too
much. Hit the song, Andy.
Is it a wig? I don't know. Wigging out with Scarpino.
I can't be the only person on this planet that noticed this guy's wearing a hairpiece.
Which
right?
one? Like Chris, Steven Stills or the other
Steven,
guy?
Lead singer of the band
Sex
is.
Sex Bomb?
Yeah, Sex Bomb. I feel like he's wearing a wig. Also, Chris Evans clearly wearing a wig. Also, Mary Elizabeth Winston. Mary Winston. What is her name? What's the name?
Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Elizabeth Winstead.
Winstead also wearing a wig. There's just an egregious amount of wigs in there. Anna Kendrick not wearing a wig. Okay.
Natural hair.
She's okay. You're okay.
I just want to say if I'm being unfortunately negative on this movie, if my tone is unfortunately negative,
I think you came on
wigs.
Real positive, Nick. We started.
Blame the wigs.
You said
all right, now it's going south. Now it's going south.
Taking
guys.
A turn, yeah.
I didn't notice any wigs at all. It, like the Ramona one, obviously. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if it's wigs. It was dye your hair that way.
Yeah, you can't dye your hair that way.
But I definitely did not notice the lead singer's wig.
I'm telling either. You, Google a picture of him right now and tell me he's not wearing a wig. I'll wait.
I just did, and I can't find any evidence that looks like he is. But I'm not.
You know what? I'll get to the bottom of this. Greg, please keep going with the plot.
I think. Well, I want to know if Mark Webber is wearing a wig. Let me see.
I think what you're noticing is how the hair kind of floats off the back. You know,
no, it's the front. It's the front part of it. It's always the front part. That's how you can tell.
Nick, right there. Is that what you're saying?
The wig.
I don't know, Nick. It looks pretty legit to me.
Damn, he might be losing again.
Wait, guys, no. Hold on.
Eat it right there.
Here we go. There is an article from MTV News. The headline is Scott Pilgrim actor Mark Webber gets Harry to play Steven Stills.
Oh,
I feel like we're going to get somewhere with
you,
this.
Nick. Ding, 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 ding. Fuck you, Nick. Ding, ding, ding,
you're
ding,
the
ding.
Only one. But you know what? It's okay. You're really carrying this cheer.
If you're in your car right now, go ahead and join me. Fuck you, Nick.
Honk, yeah. Honk, 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 honk.
Yo, so straight up, I'm giving them, this is a quote from him, I'm giving them a nice canvas to work with. So, he doesn't know what the makeup department's going to do with him, but he figures it's better to overgrow rather than overcut.
That's a great point.
I've got my sideburns going. I'm growing my hair really long. I'm a shaggy guy right now, so they can cut the hair just like Steven
Stills.
Damn,
Nick.
No.
Damn,
no.
Bro.
No. Listen, this is the... No. Again, this is the big wig conspiracy. Don't buy into big wig because this is the same problem we had with Evangeline Lilly where she was like, I'm not wearing a wig. I don't buy it.
This is the same problem. The same problem we had. The big controversy.
I'm slacking you guys a shot of this Google search.
I'm pulling up images.
Hair is clearly not correct. We can move on, but I'm just saying.
I feel like
Nick,
where's your Slack? The right thing.
Hold on, I can't figure out where to go. There it is. I'm on like eight computers now. I can't let it go. But it is an assets. There you go.
That's
there
it. It
is. Only there it is. Yeah, bring that shit up.
Goddamn Wigspiracy, man. Anymore. It's
crazy. Listen, this is what I'm saying. Pull this up right now so we can look. And you tell me that hairline, Andy, looks natural, Andy. Look at that right there. Look at his hairline. You tell me that's a perfect wig line if I've ever seen one. I rest my case, Your Honor.
I mean, you also looked up Mark Weber wig. So, you know what I mean? Like, you're looking for very specific things. And
there's more of us out there. All I'm saying is, listen, all I'm saying is if you're a believer in the Wigspiracy, there's dozens of us. Okay, you're not alone.
Before we move on, let me tell you about our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Limited Run Games pre-orders of Scott Pilgrim versus the World, the Game Complete Edition. The physical Limited Run Games pre-orders for Scott Pilgrim versus the World, the Game Complete Edition are now available. Get the game in Standard, Classic, or the KO editions on Nintendo Switch and PlayStation 4 now. Each edition is full of goodies. Standard editions include commemorative Clash of Demonhead tickets, Classic editions feature a deluxe clamshell retro box with an alternative Ramona cover, CD soundtrack, folded overworld map, and sticker sheet. The tricked out KO editions include everything from the classic edition in an authentic hard shell roadie case box with a pop-up band scene that includes working stage lights and Onomatoguchi music. You gotta love the Gooch. All editions of the game plus some exclusive merch are available during a special 6-week open pre-order closing February 28th. Be sure to pick these items up before then, because once pre-orders close, you won't be able to purchase these collectibles ever again. Head to limitedrungames.com/Scott to pre-order your game today. That's limitedrungames.com/Scott to pre-order your game today.
Is it four games?
Now let's move on.
That'd be great.
That would have been amazing.
It's Scott Pilgrim.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, that's even better.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Hey, we're talking about Scott Pilgrim.
Mm-hmm. So you would say this is the right thing. Quick question. Did Mark Weber wear a wig in Scott Pilgrim?
Yeah.
I have sent it via DM to Edgar Wright. We will see if we get a response during
Thank
the show.
Thank you.
You're welcome. No problem. No problem.
Gosh, could you imagine? It's revealed here. Breaking Honestly. News.
Hey, imagine if he responds super fast.
Oh, hey, guys. I'm watching the live stream right now. Yeah.
Yeah. Send him the link to the Discord. See if he wants to come in.
Here's what I'm going to say, guys. I hope he gets back to you, and I hope he says unequivocally no. Because if he says yes, it's going to turn me into a fucking monster. Next up, Evangeline Lilly, we're looking at you. We're coming for you.
I'll DM
just DM
guy,
him.
Peter Jackson.
He'll know someone.
No, who did Ant-Man? I forgot.
I mean, ironically, Edgar Wright was going to be.
Going to do Ant-Man. That's true. By the way, watching this movie, how much would you love to see that Ant-Man Edgar Wright cut? Because when I saw this, that would have been so cool.
I would love to see. I mean, this whole thing of doing Edgar Wright in review has been like, fuck, how great would it be if Ant-Man was in here? I would fucking love to see what he would have done.
I like
Not that Ant-Man was bad.
That's my thing.
Yeah,
exactly. I'm not saying it was needed or whatever. So, we're at the Battle of the Bands now. They are all nervous. They have the drawings by Brian, or at least the characters look like they're drawn by Brian Lee O'Malley here, I guess. Where they're going through, they don't know the drummer. Kim freaks out when the drummer is a girl, because obviously that's her shtick. They go out there and they play.
Eyes at each other. It's so
good. Yeah. But they go out there and play.
12-year-old child.
I love it. It's so cool.
I love it so much. It's brilliant.
All the bands were named after NES games: Crash of the Boys, Clash of Demonhead, all that stuff.
It's Crash of the Boys game.
You know,
not really.
I love when that, by the way, when the band first plays and it's like a chord where they're like, we're sad. And then Kieran and Colquitt's like, it's not a race, guys.
It's so good. It's so good.
This whole scene, like the whole battle, the first battle of the band scene, I think is just so perfectly done and like kind of like encapsulates the entire movie in just one like 10-minute piece where the best comedy, the like music, the world, everything they're doing, the characters are just at their best with having Kieran Culkin's character there just kind of like talking shit the whole time. And then we have his sister, or Anna Kendrick, Scott's sister, sitting up there kind of being the more real voice in the whole thing, but still getting sucked into the insanity. But also, adding music into movies is always very difficult because it can go on a little too long where it's like, this isn't worth it. they did it perfectly here. We got a couple songs from multiple bands, and it was never like, oh, okay, I'm over this.
Yeah, the songs are super short, right?
This sequence is probably my favorite in the whole movie. Yeah, wow. I love that it ends with Anna Kendrick seeing Kieran Culkin kissing her boyfriend. Like, it's so fucking good. And she
says, again. Not again.
I love it.
So, yeah. Everything you just said happens. You know, Knives is about to reveal her true relationship with Scott to Ramona. Ramona also says she's just friends to Scott, and Anna Kendrick's like, she has so many friends. When they start playing, Knives passes out from excitement. They get up there, they play for a couple licks or whatever, right? And then Patel shows up. He comes in, Scott Pilgrim. He keeps nailing the grim. I like that. We need to fight. Scott has no idea what he's talking about, of course. They fight a little bit, then he's like, wait, you don't know what I'm talking about? Didn't you read my email? He's like, no. But they end up fighting, and like we said, it's Bollywood inspired or whatever, and they do that, and he summons like snake chicks or something. Like, they have like demon teeth and crap, demon, and they're up there floating around.
I love like her reasoning. I love her saying, you know, we were in high school and it was just a bunch, all the jocks were after me, and he was the only non-white guy in school. Like, it's such a, like, I don't know, I love that little weird line of dialogue. Like, we were taking on the world. And then they show that, I guess in that moment, you're not really sure what this universe is about until she talks about it and says, yeah, me and him just took them all out. And they show, like, this little animatic fight scene. You're like, oh, they can actually, like, fight in this world? Like, what is this universe? It's so bizarre. And then we obviously see she talks about Matthew Patel's powers, and then that's all revealed in a really cool way.
I know we've seen it once before, but like them showing the comic book style, like, actually being done as this animatic, it's so cool and such a cool nod to the comic book.
Some of them are from the comics and some of them are original for the movie, which is pretty cool too with the comic stuff. And all the music is done by like actual musicians, which is why it's so good. And the different bands are based off of real bands. So the Black Sheep song by Metric, like Clash of Demonhead, are based on Metric. They do the song. Yeah. Beck does a lot of the other music that we hear for like Sex Bomb and all that stuff. But the Matthew Patel song, the Bollywood one, was written by Dan the Automator, which is dope as fuck. He's awesome. Classic hip hop guy from the Bay Area, and I just like, you can totally hear the style in it. It's awesome.
Scott punches him. He turns into coins. He goes, "Ooh, coins!" One of my favorite parts. Picks him up. Ramona turns and is immediately like, "Nice meeting you." And I gotta go. She grabs Scott. They leave. Knives wakes up. On the bus ride home, Ramona explains to him that, you know, to date her, to keep dating her, he'll have to defeat her seven evil exes. He's like, oh, I got to beat your ex-boyfriend. She's like, exes, which is a fun joke throughout the way, all the way to the reveal. She's like, do you understand this? And he's like, mm-hmm. So we're dating? Yeah, go ahead.
During this part, as she's talking about the backstory of the exes and all that stuff, if you look out the window of the bus, all of the bokeh effects, so like the camera stuff where it like blurs the lights in the back, the lights are all X's.
Oh, that's cool.
They're going, and then once like they start talking about their relationship, they all turn to hearts.
No, oh, very.
That's
neat.
Really cool. Yeah, the X's pop up a lot too. Like, I feel like it was Jason Schwartzman. Like, the reflection in his glasses is an X.
Yeah,
it's really cool. Really cool how they do that stuff.
So animated.
When they're walking, when they've got it down to five, there's them walking the street with a bunch of like all the X's yellow X's behind them. Yeah. I like that a lot. Cool. I like them a lot. So Scott comes home the next day, right? This is where he walks in. He's in love and he's all happy and he changes, and Kieran Culkin's making bacon, and he's making it for Anna Kendrick's boyfriend, and he's like, Kieran Culkin's like, Scott Pilgrim's like, you can't be here tonight because I invited Ramona over for dinner, so you have to get out of here. And he's like, you can't do that until you break up with Knives. I commanded, I decreed, or whatever. He said, then he's like, oh, I don't want to, blah, blah. But he's gonna do it. And then Kieran Culkin's like, won't be a big deal for me not being around because I'm gonna go see Chris Evans. I'm stalking Chris Evans, and he's filming a movie up at the castle tonight, so I'll do that and you can break up with Knives. And Scott's like, but he agrees to do it or whatever. So then him and Knives go out. This is where she does the I'm in love thing, and he like does the push it away. He breaks up with her. He crushes her. She's got that, like, you know, dark, so black sad background, just black background behind her. I love the way they do that.
So sorry.
But now he's free and clear. He has Ramona over for dinner. What he's going to make is garlic bread. that's his meal he's going to make for her. This is where she walks in with the blue hair too, right?
Yeah, and he's like, you changed your hair. Yeah,
she's too impulsive for me. She's too crazy for that. Oh, no, I guess that happens at band practice. They're at band practice. She comes over. She has blue hair. Also, Steven Stills had been like, no more girls at band practice. No more girlfriends at band practice or whatever. He's like, of course not. They play for like 2 seconds. Then she shows up. He freaks out about blue hair. He puts on the weird hat because he's afraid of his hair, as he does throughout the rest of the movie. They go home at this point. Neil starts playing for Scott. This is where they make the garlic bread. This is where he's telling Wallace, like, I'm in over my head. She's too impulsive, yada, yada, yada. He doesn't want Wallace to leave now. Wallace does leave. He makes the bread. This is where you get the 15 minutes later, 60 minutes later, yada, yada, so on and so forth as they continue to go. And this is the great bread makes you fat line.
Kevin, you were about to say something?
Yeah, I mean, it was way, way earlier. But I love the joke of when it cuts and he's standing with the band. Like they're doing the rehearsals, and he's like, "Dude, you've been playing the same note for 2 hours." It's just so I love that.
Eventually, they go through, you know, all the things you would do, I guess, in your lame apartment of making garlic bread, drinking some wine, making out a bit, and then she mentions his hair, right? And he puts on the hat, and then they go for a walk. Because, of course, I think it's already been revealed at this point, or maybe it hasn't, that Envy, crushed him when she made fun of, or said his hair was too, he got a haircut that was bad. No, it hasn't been revealed, but he got a haircut that was bad, and then she dumped him, and so he blames that, and so he's been letting his hair go ever since, or he cuts his hair on his own now, all the time.
I love how they showed this in the movie, because this is a huge plot point in the comics that, like, is actually stretched out to a much longer thing, where he eventually gets his haircut and stuff, but... I like how in this movie they did the him just looking and having the art and then having the narrator kind of explain
because
it's like that's an example of what I was saying earlier of how I think this movie does a really good job of not just telling the exact same story as the book but being like how would this be very funny in this medium. I think they absolutely nailed it. A second ago we saw the Seinfeld music play when they came
that was great when he slides back in
and with the laugh track and all that stuff. And I remember being in theaters and just like dying at that, like thinking it was so fucking funny and like clever and unique because we haven't seen that type of thing before. And then shortly after when we get the Chris Evans scene, the Universal music plays, it's just like, this is fucking awesome.
Yeah. So from there, right, they go on a walk and she's like, you didn't just take me on a, you know, walk in the cold to wear so you could wear your stupid hat. No, he's like, no, I just love walking. So but they end up running into Kieran Culkin up at the castle where they're filming a movie, and eventually, we're gonna see this and they're gonna do that. And you know, Troy's Chris Evans is over there. And she's like, Chris Evans, and then it's Chris Evans, and she's like, we gotta get out of here. Why? He's one of my evil exes. They banter back and forth while the scene starts or whatever. And then, of course, Chris Evans isn't doing the scene, he's actually yelling at Scott Pilgrim. So he comes over, punches Scott Pilgrim.
A famous person he yelled at. Famous and he said my name.
He comes over, he knocks down Scott Pilgrim, then turns to Ramona. How are you? How's life? He seems nice. Or I guess that's after he threw him, actually. But after the first punch, when Scott Pilgrim was like, can I have your autograph? Like, I love, that's great. This whole scene's funny. As he gets his stunt doubles to fight.
Actual stunt doubles. They're all, all of them are actually Chris Evans stunt doubles for various movies. That's
fantastic.
Movies.
That's awesome. Need so many?
That's crazy. Yeah, I was like, that's crazy that Chris Evans was that big to necessitate 8 stunt doubles for his movies. He did like The Losers and that weird movie with Anna Faris.
Fantastic Four, right?
Fantastic Four, 1 and 2.
Good point. All right. Let's see Michael Chiklis's career.
But these motherfuckers, they gang up, and I love that it just turns immediately, again, like I was saying for the first fight, where it's like, it wasn't just a fight, it was a musical. It's like this, it's like immediately, it's like him versus a bunch of different people, and like also a Tony Hawk Pro Skater, like final fight thing. What? But I love when his stunt people are fighting Scott, and we just get Chris Evans just walking.
And look at his phone, he laughs.
Look at his phone, just,
that's actually hilarious.
Yeah. So fucking Edgar Wright. It's just beautiful comedy, man.
Well, I love then the one-liner from Scott of like, Mr. Evans, you're needed back on set. I'm like, you know what I mean? Like, that was fucking rad, and he's surrounded by all the beat-up guys. They fight a little bit more, and then you know, eventually he gets knocked.
Thingy?
Yeah, he's like, I'm a skate brand. Can you do a thingy? You mean a grind? Yeah, can you do a grindy thingy? He's like, that's why there's girls around, there's cameras. All right.
That's one great thing about this whole movie is Chris. There's so much purposeful overacting that's so cheesy and great. And Chris Evans is one example, and so is Brie Larson. Her her dramatic sort of looks away and all.
The femme fatale, yeah.
It's so fucking good. But I love Chris Evans in this role as the douchebag. It's so spot on.
So he blows up and then they go to the next thing, right? Does she run? No, she doesn't run away here. That's later. They go back home, him and Kieran. And is this when Envy calls?
I think she did run away.
She did go away, yeah.
Yeah.
Did she run away? Anybody? Nobody?
Yeah, this is where he's, yes, he's trying to find her, but she left the premises. She left the scene or whatever.
Later when she finds him, she's like, hey, sorry, that was like too much. And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay.
I thought it was later that, it doesn't matter. I thought later she leaves and he calls a bunch and she doesn't answer and then they run into each other.
That's way later.
Else.
That's when she leaves with Gideon.
Man,
right?
She is just a shitty person too. What a what a group of garbo people.
But that's the thing. They're both shitty people and it's not going to end well for them at the end of this all. You know?
Yeah. I think though, so he goes home and he's him and then Envy calls and wrecks him again and is asking questions, right? And she's going to be in town and he should come to the show and he definitely won't come to the show. She's like, great, I'll leave you tickets kind of thing. He goes into town. This is where the other evil ex, Mae Whitman, shows up, right? And he punches her in the boob. This is the Ninja Gaiden opening you're talking about.
Yeah, which is so great. And again, love that it just plays with the format immediately. It's not just onto another fight. It's just kind of like this weird mini boss thing. Love that.
Yeah, and I love that he's, you know, he's doesn't want to do it right there. She's like, fine, I'll be back later. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He goes to visit Anna Kendrick at the coffee shop. He does the call from outside. She leaves him out. Again, this is just a funny bit, right? Of like, are you at work? Yeah, all right, cool. I'm coming over. And then he's like right outside and he walks in. She's already somehow outside. This is where Aubrey Plaza tears into him because, of course, he did not listen to her. And she's cursing a lot and they're bleeping him out. How are you doing that with your mouth? and then, yeah, Ramona's right there, I guess, that is the thing we're talking about of like, yeah, you know, sorry, that was too much for me, I guess. Then Envy's there too. And that's, you know, we're doing the show thing. Oh, and she doesn't say that though. She's doing a show, they should come, it's weird, whatever.
You're on the list.
Yeah. On the walk home, Scott and Ramona are talking, and Ramona's like, or no, Scott's talking about how, you know, Envy ended badly. She wanted to go be with her friend. Let me guess, she started fucking that guy. Yeah, his name's Troy, right? Or whatever, it's Brandon Routh. I dated a Brandon Routh too. Oh, okay. But like, you know, it's not, you don't know it's the same person yet. Yeah, yeah.
Like all the little setups are...
Go ahead.
I was just saying, I love all the little setups, like the way they introduced
confrontation,
Lucas or whatever, where, you know, we had Kieran being like, hey, I'm going to go stalk this guy. And they like they mention his name and like it's and all course. Like peppered. It's all peppered out. It's all love it.
Yeah. So this is the next then. Okay, so we're not going to go to Envy Adams' show, right? But guess what we are, because Steven Stills has booked the band there because it's the next Battle of the Band. Or she booked him as the opening. I guess it's not a Battle of the Bands. They're playing there, though, as the opening for the secret show thingamajig. On that plane of action, that's happening. On the other one, Knives is mad at Ramona and keeps calling her fat and old and dyes part of her hair blue, which is fun. We're then at the secret show where Knife shows up and is kind of single white female to Ramona, which is hilarious. They walk out. Ramona's like, what was the deal with you and that girl? Oh, he doesn't say we dated here. Something interrupts him or whatever, but she's over there with young Neil now and it's weird. And then it's time to go play. They go play. Then it's time for Envy to come out. She does. And she plays the song Andy Loves that everybody loves. And he's huge on TikTok right now, according to Jen. Agree with that, Tim? Do you see that on TikTok a lot?
I haven't heard it anywhere, okay. I wouldn't be surprised. But I think Black Sheep Fox.
I think I have heard it connected to that fake songs, right?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably
it's,
you're right.
It's
you're
a
right,
slap. Right. I really like that song.
Yeah. And so yeah, after the show, Envy invites everybody backstage. They all go backstage. It's really awkward and uncomfortable. This is where we're introduced to Brandon Routh's character Todd, who, you know, is vegan and he's better than everybody, and they banter and bicker back and forth for a little bit. Eventually Knives stands up or something to defend Scott or everybody, I don't remember, and Brandon Routh just fucking punches her. She's like, yeah, I'll punch a girl.
Knives is just being annoying. She just keeps on trying to, I read your blog, Envy, and then she brings up the second time something else that's very fangirly.
I kiss the lips that kiss yours. Shut
up. Yes.
It's such a horrible line to say just in the middle of a room.
And then, yeah, this is the, he punched the blue, the highlights out of her hair. So fucking good. Young Neil gets her out of there. Scott eventually stands up and decides to fight Todd. This is where Todd, of course, goes Super Saiyan with his vegan powers. Same. He, you know, freezes. I don't want your stupid
Super Saiyan. All right. He said Saiyan, it's Saiyan. Okay.
He freezes Scott. Throws him through the back of a window. Last Saiyan, that's the one, the dragon, right? Sean Connery. Mm-hmm. He's the last.
Absolutely.
He's the last. I am the last Saiyan. You know what I mean?
Last Dragonhawk.
Remember Grunt from Mass Effect? That was kind of a Grunt impression.
We're all over the map right now. We're doing a great job, guys.
He's thrown out the window or the wall, and then Brandon Routh just kicks the shit out of Scott for a while, punches him up in the air really high at one point.
That was okay.
We're going to go to Pizza. We'll be back.
Yeah, we call us when you're done with your thing. They leave as they fight, and they continue to fight, and they fight for a long time, and they smash through a bunch of stuff. At one point, when Scott's thrown through the wall, you think that the way he's going to beat him was with his bass or whatever, because he's got his bass guitar or just guitar. I don't know the difference. And he's playing the thing to him.
Here's the thing. Here's what's so fucking rad about this. Again, unique gimmicky fights. It goes from a fight to obviously a type of Guitar Hero Rock Band style dual thing. But he's playing the fucking Final Fantasy IV boss theme that he referenced earlier on the bass. And I'm like, this is so sick, man. They just fucking really get cool. It.
So they fight for a while, and you know, Todd still beats his ass and puts him down, and then he's like, all right, before you kill me, you want to have a cup of coffee or whatever? And he's like, I know that you put dairy in one of these, half and half in one of these, and soy in the other, so I'm gonna take the one with soy. I can read your mind because of my vegan powers. And then he drinks it, and Scott's like, no, I actually thought really hard about the opposite, so you just drank the dairy. And he's like, what?
So dumb.
His hair goes flat.
It's not even a satisfying reasoning. It's not like anything overly clever. It's just a stupid fucking lie. I love it.
It is clever. It works. You know, he got him.
He got him, and then the vegan police come in. He's like, isn't there like a three strikes policy? And they run through the different things where he fucked up. And he's like, gelato isn't vegan. And he's like, chicken isn't vegan.
Gelato isn't vegan. Eggs and milk, bitch.
Yeah,
and that other guy, the one that's not Punisher, is from Westworld, right?
Yeah.
He was also in what's that? Bad Boys? No, not Bad Boys. The movie with Michael Cera and the other kid.
Super Bad.
High school. Super Bad, right? He's the guy's like, I can get you alcohol.
No, that's the guy from Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah, that's right.
No, he played the fucking gangster in 187. He was terrifying in that movie.
He's in a bunch of good stuff. He's like one of those character actors you see in a bunch of stuff.
He's definitely in a movie that we've reviewed here that we said, oh, he's the guy from Westworld.
Fuck, he is. I'll look it up. Hold on.
So then Todd doesn't have his powers, so Scott headbutts him really hard, hurts his head, and then he tries to make nice with Envy, kind of like, all water under the bridge. He's like, you just headbutted my boyfriend into coins. And he's like, well, you fucking broke my heart and insulted my hair or whatever. So he leaves. They go to Pizza. Do you want to go to the after party? Both Scott and Ramona don't want to go, but it's that thing where if you want to go, I'll go kind of thing. So they kind of end up egging each other on into it, even though Scott is not in a good place. They go to the after party, and Scott's being a dick here, right? Like he's losing his grip on it as he actually keeps fighting people, and he's kind of throwing it in Ramona's face.
What, have you dated everybody in here? You know, sort of thing. Yeah.
I think that might be after the Mae Whitman shows up here in a second. To fight. Scott won't. Well, you know, originally Ramona goes out there. She's going after him. She pulls the big mallet out of her handbag, like in the comics, like in the video game, which apparently sponsored this episode. Shout out to
this is my favorite scene in the movie. I totally fucking love it. It came out of left field for me, where I didn't see this coming. And the way that they shoot it, her grabbing the foot and kind of slow-mos, and the versus comes and it's Ramona fighting.
Yeah,
all that shit's sick. I think it's the most interesting visually. Actual fight scene, like with the different weapons being used.
Sherry, she's using that cool belt sword, and then like Ramona's crazy mallet gets thrown outside and smashes into the ground.
That stuff. So the sound effects are fun, like all of it. I just think it's the most well choreographed actual fight scene. But what was cool too is it surprised me in the movie, because in the comics there's a scene a lot earlier that's Knives and Ramona fighting at a mall. And when that didn't happen, I was like, oh, this sucks. We're probably not going to see Ramona fight. But seeing her do this, I was like, this is fucking excellent call.
Eventually, Mae Whitman's like, fuck off. I'm saying it. It is Mae Whitman, right?
Mae Whitman. I keep thinking, every time you said, I think Meg
maybe.
Whitman.
I keep thinking maybe too.
Maybe. Real quick, Andy, the one of the vegan police was the detective from... Oh, it was right there. I had a second ago. Yeah, Thomas Jane, but he was the
Punisher. Detective. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but he was also the detective in The Expanse. Oh! He's Miller.
That's right.
You know Miller's Andy, planet. I'm going to blow your mind right now. The other guy was in the 2009 Star Trek. He played Nemo's, like, right-hand man.
Oh, yes. That's where we were reviewing Star Trek, and we said, oh, the other guy, he's one of the guys from Westworld. That's what it had to have been.
He's awesome. Yeah.
So Mae Whitman's like, Ramona, stop trying to fight his battles. He's got to fight his own thing. Scott's like, I'm not going to hit a girl. Ramona's like, you have to. So she jumps behind him and kind of like exoskeletons it, where she's like controlling him and punching around and stuff.
It had to be Michael Cera. Like, this movie had to be directed by Edgar Wright, and Scott Pilgrim had to be Michael Cera for this shit to work.
It works so well.
Eventually, Ramona gets knocked down, and she's like, touch the back of her knee. He's like, what? Whenever we were making out, that's okay, I get it. And he does it. She goes down. And right as she's about to crescendo into her orgasm, she's like, you'll never be able to give Ramona pleasure like this. He turns into a bunch of coins.
In the comics, they don't do the coin thing as much as they do in the movie. In this one, everyone turns into a coin. In the books, like, there's some change-ups every once in a while. And her death, she turns into a bunch of small little woodland creatures, like at the end of a Sonic the Hedgehog level.
Nice.
When you, like, jump on the thing and little animals run away. Yeah, it's funny.
From here, this is where Scott goes into full asshole mode, and she even calls him out, like, you're the first asshole I haven't dated. Oh, now you are. He gets 2 G&Ts, and he doesn't drink, so he immediately gets drunk and immediately starts being an asshole. And this is where she's like, we should split. He's like, do you mean split, or do you mean break up or leave or whatever, right? Yeah. And she's like, I don't know, what do you think I mean? And so they're just having a big fight, and they leave. This is where I'm browning out on this one. This is where he calls her and she doesn't answer, and there's no way to talk to her, and he's angry, and he has all this anger, and he throws it back into the band to then go to the next battle of the bands, where they're going amp for amp against the twins, who can make dragons out of sound waves. And when they're setting up for that,
exclamation points on the poster.
yeah. That's when he sees Ramona in the crowd with green hair with Gideon, Fran. AKA Jason Schwartzman, AKA Phantom Planet. He puts it together there that Mr. G, or whatever they've been calling him, right? The G-Man is Gideon Graves, who is Ramona's ex, who is the person in charge of the record label for the deals they're trying to go for or whatever. So, before Scott, Kim has like a soft moment. Is like, you should go over there and apologize to her right now. I talk to her right now. I don't wait or whatever. But before that can happen, the battle of the band starts. So from across the way, they start doing their crazy twin stuff with the dragons and the interlocking powers and the giant amps and music waves coming out. Maybe they blast first and then knock them down. Maybe they go and they start doing waves of music are crashing into each other, and a very cool thing. And again, for a movie that's 11 years old, like, I think this holds up. I think it looks good. I think we're not even talking about the cinematography and the text on screen and all that jazz. I mean, the actual way these graphics and the, don't they make a giant like King Kong to fight the giant dragon?
It's supposed to be Donkey Kong and Double Dragon.
Gotcha.
Didn't get that right. Thanks, Nintendo. Thanks for screwing that
up. Fucking goddamn it, Nintendo. How much money did you need in 2010, Reggie? You know what I mean?
I feel like this was cooler, though, you know? Like, because, like, King Kong has a look, and I just think that, like, this, like, grungy drawing that someone would have, like, a sticker on their skateboard fits so perfectly with, like, the design, you know? So I'm actually glad they didn't get the rights for King Kong or Donkey Kong.
I'm with Greg too, though. I do love how these effects hold up, and I think a large portion of that is because it's just not really done that much in movies. This was, to me, I watched this and it was like, this and Stranger Than Fiction are the movies that I remember seeing a lot of that cool intentional 2D text on screen, where it was like, hey, this is gonna stick out, but it's like tracked and all that stuff, very After Effects. And that was like near and dear to my heart too, because I was like, part of my brain, Tim, was like, I could have directed this movie because I know After Effects, which in reality is complete and total bullshit. But like, I just remember seeing that being like, oh, I think I know how they did that. Or like, I think this is so cool. And like, oh, they tracked it like this. And the fact that they intentionally used that 2D look to have it be more like a comic book page, I thought was really cool.
The song that they're singing, I'm reading the lyrics. I'm reading the subtitles. I was like, this doesn't really make sense. Maybe I look up the lyrics. Maybe it'll kind of like make a little bit more sense. It does it. Like, it's obviously an original song that Tim, you said that Beck worked on, but I'm hearing voices, animal noises, the cream de la creme, the feminine abyss. I'm reaching my threshold, staring at the truth till I'm blind. What is any of that? Like, what?
So
it's about sex.
Everyone playing the music in the movie, they actually were playing the music and stuff. So like, even like Brandon Routh and stuff learned how to play bass to do this. And there's some scenes where that's not true.
Scott Pilgrim was playing bass?
But so that's the thing is Michael Cera's really good at it and had to dumb it down because all the other people in Sex Bomb weren't trained for that.
I would have never guessed that. He looks like so helpless.
And that was
he plays like, a riff at one point though.
Oscar-worthy he plays like the Ramona song
he can actually play.
Yeah, when he plays the guitar, I could definitely tell that. But the rest of it, I was like, he looks like what rapper? Was it Lil Wayne that tried to pretend he was playing guitar?
Yeah.
That's what it reminded me of.
I love that Tim immediately knows. Tim's like, I know exactly.
I'll never forget Prom Queen, man. Rebirth era was very scary and sad. Rough,
yeah.
But to go back to this, Andy, the Beck, who wrote the music for it, like literally gave himself like 48 hours. To write all the music stuff.
Because
they're like, we wanted to make it like very, 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 like, it is punk rock shit. Like, yeah, that's what it is.
This song's been in my head forever.
I liked it. It was a good one. I like the soundtrack to this movie, even though if the lyrics don't make sense or nonsense or whatever. So, they beat the twins. Hooray. All is well. Ramona leaves with Gideon. Scott Pilgrim gives chase, runs into Knives, but runs around Knives. Also, I think I've totally skipped it at this point, but Knives' obsession and being like a obsessed fan, like the window of the band practice and shit, all that was hilarious. They get outside though, and he finally lays it out to Ramona that he's in lesbians with her and all this stuff. And she's like, okay, great. I think we should break up. I'm leaving. I'm going back to New York with Gideon or whatever. Is this where she shows she has the chip, or was that?
I think it's later.
She just touches it. We kind of see it. She touches it. The Under My Thumb song.
He has his control over me. Yeah.
This Fran is the part of the movie, like, super to me, is just like, we needed the movie should have ended, and this should have been a second movie.
Because,
like,
so much
of it is just condensed and just like boom, 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 on to the next, which is fine. Sure. It's serviceable. But my problem is, it's not like the comics solved this. Like, the twins in the comics were more fleshed out, and like, they kind of sucked. And like, they kidnapped Kim at some point. Kim ends up making out with Knives. Like, there's a lot of bizarre choices.
Is that when we get the Kim backstory and like, because that story that he says, where he jokes to with Ramona, where he's like, I had to fight 100 people, and then we got there. There was a giant guy. Like, that was real, right?
Yeah,
in the comics. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gideon rolls up and is like, you lose, I win. I'm sorry. It's okay, though, because if it wasn't for her, then I wouldn't have done this, and we wouldn't have done that, and we wouldn't have been together, and yada, yada, yada. The band rolls out, and Gideon's like, you guys crushed it, though. That's the good news. Like, I want to sign you all to a record deal right now. We don't even have to finish Battle of the Bands. You guys win. Scott's like, under no circumstance will I. Everybody else signs it. And even when he's like, you can't do it without me, young Neil shows up with the bass and signs to be part of Sex Bomb under the Gideon Graves contract. The band leaves. Gideon leaves with Ramona. They all go. And we get a dejected Scott down on his luck. He, you know, hangs out with Hannah Kendrick for a little bit and talks about that. He goes home. And this is, where Wallace is like, you have to leave. And he's like, I know. But like, also, you know, Ramona me and the band's over. He's like, oh, that sucks, whatever. While he's chilling at Wallace's place, he gets a phone call from Gideon, who's like, hey, we are throwing this soiree or whatever, some party for some reason, you should come to it or whatever. He says something shitty about Ramona too, because she's there, and he's like, are we together, babe, or something like that. And she's like in zombie mode. Scott then decides he's gonna fight for it. He goes down there. He goes down there. This is the funny thing, too, of like, what's the password? Whatever. What's the password? Like, they both are just, they let him in or whatever. They get in there. Sex Bomb's there. You know, they've sold out. They're up there, basically unleashes as well, for all intents and purposes, getting to the top of this pyramid with Ramona there. He's like, Scott,
ton of Earthbound references here. The Chaos Theater that they're playing at is a place from Earthbound, and just like a lot of designs of stuff is from Earthbound, which is cool.
Quick question for Tim. The Gideon's plan, like in the comics, it's way more convoluted, right? He was like trying to form like the perfect
girlfriend. In the comics, it's essentially Final Fantasy VII, where like it turns into a final boss fight.
Wait, hold on, Nick, does that mean anything to you? Because like fucking blown away by that statement.
I don't understand it. I'm scared.
Yeah, it's scary stuff, guys.
They bring him a Diet Coke. He knocks it on the ground really rudely, and he's like, "No, we're just gonna fight. So let's get into it." Wherever they go,
I'm sorry,
fight.
Greg. It's a Coke Zero, is what he drinks.
Oh, my apologies. My apologies.
Dear to my heart.
This is where Scott learned the power of love or whatever, and pulls the sword out of his chest that time. Him and Gideon fight. Knives shows up. Well, I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff. Kim does the "We are Sex Bomb. We're here to sell out," and they. Scott kills a whole bunch of people in a really fun action scene that's turning everybody to coins, eventually getting to Gideon to fight Gideon a bit. Then Knives shows up to fight Ramona.
This was the Ninja Gaiden part in the movie, was the Gideon introduction when they first start fighting, and we see the widescreen gets really small and all that stuff. Whereas in the book, it was with Roxy.
Gotcha. And so there's a fight here, and they're brawling, and then Scott, you know, is dimed out for cheating on Knives with Ramona, and then Ramona's like, "Well, you cheated on me then too," and he's like, "Well, not really, you know." He has a shitty answer for it. He's being a shitty person or whatever.
You weren't wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, how so? You weren't wrong.
What a good line.
Gideon is there then to fight them, and Gideon in the beginning, he's ass kicked for a while, right? And then
Gideon takes the cane and like pulls it out like a sword, then jumps on it, which is fucking reference to DuckTales on the NES of Scrooge McDuck, the way that he would, and Shovel Knight as well, like the way he jumps. It's great.
But eventually, I forget how, whatever, but like Gideon gets the upper hand and stabs Scott through the chest, right?
Well, yeah, they like defeated him, kind of. Like he like passed out, and then Scott's talking to someone, and he comes up and stabs him from behind through the heart.
Right. He dies. The thing I skip, but we already talked about too, is that, you know, when he was getting off the stage at Battle of the Bands against the twins, he grabbed the one up and says, "I'm getting a life," which is a great line and really played in the trailer and the movie. Anyways, he goes to the desert place where he's there. "Oh man, this sucks being dead." And Ramona comes through and he's like, "I was fighting for you. Maybe you should fight for somebody else." And then Scott, you know, remembers the one up, and we see him getting it again. He hits it. He uses it. He comes back. Very video game. He starts at the checkpoint right at his house or whatever. Then we see a very fast motion of him going through all the things, insulting everybody. He walks up to them rather than say the passwords and shit. Gets in there, you know, does the thing, pulls out the thing. You've learned the power of self-respect. Fights everybody, calls Knives out early to say don't do that, apologizes to Knives and Ramona for cheating on them both. You know, says, I think, is this where he apologizes to Kim too? This is where he makes his amends,
yeah,
right?
He walks in immediately, looks at the band, and he's like, "You guys are better off without me, Neil. Great job. You're better than me," whatever.
Exactly. And then, you know, proceeds to clown everybody out again, do all that stuff, and this time he kills Gideon, right? Yeah.
They team up.
They do the DDR thing against him. Right.
Love that. It was all the same sound effects. And the announcer of all the narration stuff is Bill Hader.
Well, that's awesome. I know that. We know, that man, right?
That's right.
We know Bill Hader.
So yeah, they do the DDR thing. They fight Jason Schwartzman, aka Fran. There's, you know, he's got an 8-bit sword and stuff. There's all this cool effects going on and stuff.
Beautiful effects.
Ramona gets the final thing, right? She knees him in the crotch, knocks him down the stairs.
Well, they do like the team up thing, because then like they knock him down the stairs, but then they like knee him and he like flips. And then
he gets like a really bad, like onto his back, right? Like crack on his back.
I love the glitch effect when he's on the ground, sort of in pain, telling them, you know, you fucked up. Yeah, it looks really cool. Yeah.
Yeah, coughing up coins or whatever. He dies. He explodes into coins. Lots and lots and lots of coins. Just
falls all over the drums. Like everybody's like, "Fuck!"
Yeah. And there's the great thing of
picking up the coins.
Exactly. What about our contract? She's like, "This is our contract." He starts putting it all into it. It's like a shirt and stuff to get as much money as he can out of it. It's great.
It was real money, real Canadian coins.
Yeah, Jen was pretty stoked when they showed it.
Throughout the entire movie, anytime there's coins, they're real coins that they were using on set and stuff. And for this scene, there was just a shit ton of coins, as you saw. So many of them were real, some were CG, but when they were done with the scene, they're like, all right, guys, take what you get. Oh. And like everyone on set, just grab what you want.
I like the idea of Michael Cera just trying to get as many as possible. Like, I could see him going way overboard.
And so then, yeah, we've won the day. We're over. We're in the outback now, not the outback, but we're out back of the club. Everybody's down, and then Nega Scott shows up, negative version of Scott, right? Black and white from the game as well that he couldn't beat, and they all leave so he can fight. And then we get the cutscene of like the door rolling up and them coming out, being friends, talking about going to brunch together. He's like, yeah, he's a great guy, really nice, you know.
Subvert expectations. Like that, yeah. Everyone's like, oh, I guess one more battle. We need this right now. And then no, it cuts to a joke where it's like, oh, look, they're buddies. All right.
Yeah, he's actually a really nice guy. Yeah.
So we get the goodbye to Knives here, where you know they have a moment of like, oh, you're cool, and I'm cooler than you though. So you know, whatever, and I'll be fine though. You should go after her. She's who you've been fighting for, because Ramona's leaving, by the way. Scott chases Ramona down. She's like, oh, you chose me. Yeah, I chose you. Like, let's go start over together thing or whatever. And there's the door from earlier with the star on it or whatever. And they walk into that and open it up and go through it. And that's Scott Pilgrim's door.
Ramona. I forgot how the song goes. It's a little song. I need to learn the tabs for it. It's a cool little chord progression, everybody.
You got the chord progression for a little haiku and review?
Oh, I do. Yeah, one sec. Hold on. Let me see if y'all can hear this. This will be a fun. Let's see. Seven syllables in. No, you don't hear that, right? No.
I hear you said. You said seven syllables.
How?
In the
middle. You had it working, Andy.
Oh, Kevin. Here we go. I got it. Ready? Y'all ready for this?
Is that it?
Seven syllables in the middle.
Oh, I hear it.
You need five for the first and last line. If you're not poetic, no need to fret it. Haikus don't need to rhyme. Haiku in review. Haiku in review.
That was amazing.
It really was amazing.
Yeah, it was good. Good job. Yeah.
It was just broke ass enough to be awesome.
Yes.
Wait, are you not going to use the other music you did? Because I like the sound.
Use that forever.
Yeah, I could. I don't know, Kevin. It's like it's a little bit tougher, dude. I'll do it right here.
There you go.
I'll do it right here.
You go to patreon.com/kindoffunny to write your review in haiku form, just like Nadia Morris did. No vegan diet, no vegan powers for you. It's milk and eggs, bitch. Miscellaneous says Knives thinks that Scott rocks, but it's Ramona he stalks, dreaming of pink locks. Three fights in, Scott's fried. That's when Roxy would arrive. Came so hard, she died. Finishing this quest, pulls katana from his chest, lays G-Man to rest. I'm liking these like sets of haikus. Good job, guys. Bumbleboy Wonder says, best 3D movie, best video game movie, if they qualified. Best 3D movie, that's a weird thing to say.
It's also not a video game. It's like, you know, it's not inspired by video games, so I don't think it qualifies as a video game movie.
According to our sponsor, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World from Ubisoft, it is.
Pen15 writes it and says, the woman he woos has seven evil ex boos. Level up or lose.
Foos. Oh.
Foos.
That was going to be fools. Yeah.
Joe Merton says, Scott, bread makes you fat. Nick, please get Scott on keto. Yes, bread makes you fat.
First off, he doesn't need to be on keto because Michael Cera is skinny as fucking all get out, which is annoying to me because he's also tall. And it's like, pick fucking one, bro. You can't be charming, skinny, and tall.
Is he tall?
Well, that's why I'm assuming.
Fuck you.
That's why I'm assuming Zac Efron didn't get the role, you know, because I definitely know that he tried out, but I'm also making that up. But also, Zac Efron's short. Not as tall as.
It's true.
Not as tall as Michael
Cera. He's one of us. Mm-hmm. He's one of us, Andy.
And Ignacio Rojas has the final one here. Says, who would have thought the best video game movie isn't based on one? And there you go. I dropped some fucking knowledge.
That was good. That was good.
Ragu Bagu time.
Ragu.
Ragu.
I fucking love it.
Amazing. Amazing. What's up, everybody? Welcome to Rad Guys Talk Bad Guys, aka Ragu Protag, where we rank the protagonists of the Edgar Wright filmography. Right now, the standings are as such. Number one is Nicholas Angel and Danny from Hot Fuzz. Number two is Sean and Ed from Dawn of the Dead. Where do we want to put Scott Pilgrim? And do you want to include Ramona in there? Or do you want to put Scott Pilgrim in there? We've been doing these buddy deals. We've been doing couples here.
I think it's just Scott.
Just Scott? Okay.
Mm-hmm. For this one.
I put him dead last with my ranking on him.
I put him last as well, but it's not in like a dead fashion. Because at the end of the day, he has funnier lines and does cooler things than Simon Pegg does in other movies we saw. But I just really hate how this all ends. So I'd go last because of that.
Wait, yeah, I just put him because I don't like him. Like I like Sean and I like Nicholas.
We're rating the characters, right?
Protagonist.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I put him in the center, but I mean, that's my opinion. It sounds like I've been outvoted.
I would put him, you know what? I would put him in the center as well. Kevin.
Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Nick. If you can flip for me,
Nick, you have so much power.
Flip for me
for Scott Pilgrim as a protagonist.
Remember all the growth. Nicholas, Nicholas, look at my eyes. Look at my eyes. Remember all the growth. And his he's stupid hair.
Last. Remember all he's the growth they last. Tell you about and don't show you.
Yeah, Nick, he's going dead last. And I feel like it's because I just feel like the other two films nail the character arc so much better. And they nail that. What I think is even harder is the dynamic between the two main characters. And, you know, Shaun of the Dead, you legitimately like think Sean is a loser at the beginning of that movie. And by the end of it, you're like, okay, he's shown a little bit more. He's shown a little bit more.
He same killed with, all his friends. Fuzz.
Bro, they were zombies.
He had to, bro.
Kevin, if you and Craig come at me zombified.
He didn't kill the zombies. He made a bad plan, and they all died.
Yeah, but the other person made a great plan, and all her friends died, too. Everyone's dying in this
did
town.
Did they Kevin was splitting die? Hairs. Did they all die?
Yeah, it's just her.
Yeah, remember?
I mean, she shows up, she's just because like, she's the at least only somebody one made there.
It. You know what? It's up for interpretation. All I'll say is this. I do wish, and I think this is to the unfortunate detriment of the movie, I do wish they had given the character a little bit more growth and a little bit more shit toward the middle of it so he could have grown more. So yeah, I think the character's got to go dead last, unfortunately, for me.
Bungo. All right, then there you go. Your Ragu Pro Tag looks like this. Number one, Nicholas Angel and Danny. Number two, Sean and Ed. And number three, Scott Pilgrim.
Thank Ragu. You. Done, Bagu.
You're such a treasure, Andy.
I was about to go, Nick, I hear what you're saying, but what about this?
Oh. Nope.
This is the next year of our life, guys.
I love it. I'm glad we're here.
Next year of our life.
Andy, to get us into the rankings, can you please hit me off with a little bit of Zombie Nation's Kerncraft 400? Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Oh, Tim, It's not fresh in my mind. It's not fresh in my mind, but I'll try it out. No. Oh, fuck. Oh, it's Jay.
Scott
hold on.
Pilgrim's dating high school.
I don't remember the notes. I can't.
Greg has been on every show today, and he is getting smaller and smaller in his chair as we go. And I just want Andy to keep trying. Just keep trying to fucking nail it.
We'll hit it.
He wasn't on Games Daily.
Poor Greg's got a 3-hour charity stream after this, and he's just like, fuck.
Let's try this a bit later.
It is time to rank the movies. Currently, number one, we have Hot Fuzz. And number two, we have Shaun of the Dead.
Is that right?
I'll open
Dead
it up.
Last.
Dead last.
You guys are idiots. This one's number one. So much of the comedy. Is the story not as... I mean, no. I don't know. The growth isn't there.
Kevin started down that track and he's like, wait, it's going to sound like I'm not backing my own argument, so I will stop.
This movie is just funny. The editing is like... this is where what's-his-face peaks. Like he, you know...
Edgar Wright.
Edgar Wright.
Yeah, like, from a visionary standpoint, I totally agree.
And a comedic. I disagree. Andy, and completely. A comedic...
I think this movie is all style, no substance.
To me, the reason why I put this dead last, not because I didn't enjoy it, because I actually did enjoy it on the second viewing of
it.
And
I don't hate it
because to me, this is the least Edgar Wright movie in this series. So if you're putting this movie against other stuff, it's a different comparison. But compared to Hot Fuzz, which and Shaun of the Dead, which are just almost perfect comedy genre movies, that you just don't get any better than that. It's got the cheeky British humor in it. It's got those cuts. It's got everything you need. And it's more importantly, it's got that dynamic between Simon Pegg and Nick Frost and Edgar Wright that you can feel both on and off camera. That just really, really works well for it. This movie just feels like he is, you know, I'm sure it was a passion project for him, but it feels like somebody else wrote this movie and it wasn't them in a room having fun. And to me, that's why I have to put it last on the Edgar Wright list. If it was going on a video game to movie list, it would probably be very, very high.
I love this live comment from Nat Vu. Quote, what's his face? The name is literally the in review, lol.
Hey, man, I'm trying to make an argument, all right? You guys can fill in the pieces, all right? These kids in the chat always give me shit about not remembering the names. It's hard. It's hard. And,
Kevin, I'm with you, Kevin. So much of knowledge is just remembering things, you know?
That's all it is. That's all it is.
I will go last place as well. I think I just like the humor a bit amount more in Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz. When it comes to a visual perspective, I think this movie's more interesting just because it's my shit, dude. Like it's 8-bit, 16-bit video game shit all over the place, invoking video game UI into the real world. Like I love anything that does that. And the fact that it's done by a fucking genius like Edgar Wright, it's even better. But I think the humor and the stories in Shaun of the Dead and, well, not so much the story in Shaun of the Dead, not a whole lot happening there, but the overall dialogue, the back and forths there are a lot more interesting to me.
Yeah, Scott Pilgrim versus the World is one of my favorite movies of all time, and I feel like it's going to end up being one of my most watched movies by the time that I die. And I will have just as much enjoyment every single time because there's just so many scenes and there's so much I absolutely love about the movie. I do think it's by far funnier than Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead, both consistently and in like funniest bits. I think that the action scenes are great. It's unique as hell. There's so much going for it, but I still, and the cast is awesome across the board and like the things that they have them do. And I, like I said earlier, I love that it's not just video games. I love that there's also so many other elements of this world that make it special. And I think that it is a very, 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 probably the most Edgar Wright movie because of those things. But I think that the story just doesn't add up of the main characters to the point that I'm like, when we're ranking these, I like to do it based on what I think is best, not just what I think is my favorite. So this would be last for me as well.
Oh, you guys are terrible. So in every metric, it's like the best movie of the list, but like the story is not quite like there because the growth.
I mean, the end sucks. I hate the end of this.
Yeah,
and ends matter a lot to me, man. It leaves a bad taste in my mouth where I'm like, ugh. And like, what I mean, sucks is there's alternate versions that I like even less.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's just no good. I think this is similar to Shaun of the Dead, where the ending is like, all right, did that character really grow that much, or did like just he survive, and you know, he just gets a better life because of that, and that's kind of what happened here. Where except for there is growth here, like. Scott Pilgrim grows, and yeah, they're not doing like they don't do a great job showing you it, but like the character does grow, and you know, I don't know, but the votes are in.
Number one, Hot Fuzz.
Stop the count.
Shaun of the Dead, and number three, Scott Pilgrim versus the World. We will return next week with both John Wick 3, closing out John Wick for now. One day we'll get John Wick 4.
John Wick.
And we will continue Edgar Wright in review. Only two more left. We got The End of the World coming up. Is that what it's called? Mm-hmm. At World's End.
Yeah.
Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End.
Yep, that's
up
the one.
Next. Yeah. And then Baby Driver after that.
The
and,
World's End.
Last Night in Soho eventually, but as of yesterday, just got delayed again to September this year. So
yeah.
we'll see how that goes. Till then, love you guys. Bye.